My guest tonight at the big table is a former nurse, personal trainer, a fitness model, all-around health nut, which is why it's hard to believe that Darvise Monson just had a kidney transplant. Monson was diagnosed with chronic kidney disease after a particularly difficult pregnancy and waited almost 2 years for a transplant after her kidneys were failing. But earlier this year, Monson's name was called in the nick of time, and she underwent transplant surgery. The kidney donor? Takiya Holmes, the 11-year-old girl who was shot and killed by a stray bullet while sitting in an idling car. It was just another senseless act of violence in Chicago, but for Darvise, a life-saving tragedy. Since she was diagnosed with chronic kidney disease, Darvise has made it her life's mission to educate and inform people about their kidneys and the risks and threats to them in our everyday environment. She's the founder of morethanyourkidneys.org. It's been 6 months since her transplant, and in studio with me tonight at the big table, Darvise Monson. Darvise, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having
me. I guess the first question I have is, how are you feeling? It's been 6 months. Next week will be 6 months since the transplant. How do you feel?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. It's still unbelievable, and it's my life. Like, every day, it's still just unbelievable. They have a saying in the transplant community, you never know how far off you were until you get the new kidney, and it's absolutely true.
You feel the difference?
Yes.
You feel automatically after you get past the surgery of the transplant?
Yeah. When you undergo dialysis, I underwent dialysis for almost 2 years. Anything outside of that is easy. That's tired. That's fatigue. People that know me closely to this day, people don't say to me, I'm so tired, because they know that you can't say that to me. I know what it's like to be tired, exhausted, fatigued. And so anything outside of that is like a step above.
Do you have to change your lifestyle? With a new kidney and even before that, like I mentioned, you're a nurse, a personal trainer, so you're already fit, right, and you're an all-around health nut. But did you have to change your lifestyle after the transplant, having a new kidney?
Yes, big time. Just because, people don't understand, it's a day-to-day battle. I would tell people before I got transplanted, I'm just working up to a transplant so that, I can have my life saved. But then that's when the real work begins. I have to build up an immune system. I'm immunocompromised, so I have to think about that. I can't do simple things without thinking like most people can. I have to stay away from people that are infection prone. If my daughter gets a cold, she's got to go someplace else. She can't be in the house with mommy, or I have to be in strict isolation. And I have to take medications every day for the rest of my life. And I'm new, so right now I'm taking a hefty amount of pills every day.
Because really, at the end of the day, and I know a little bit about this because I have a friend who went through it, but the medication is essentially to let your body know that the kidney is not a foreign agent.
Exactly.
Because that's where it can go wrong, where it attacks the kidney because it feels like it shouldn't be there.
And it's very specific. You can't be, you think about things that other people don't. You can't be 4 hours late taking your meds or 2 hours late, because you really have a system going on saying, hey, what's this? We're going to attack it and defend, Darvise's body. And so that's the way I explain it, to my daughter. And it's an ongoing thing. And again, you can get rejected at any time while living this life. You can do everything correctly but you can't control it. You can just do your part. So right. I work very hard at doing my part.
Darvise, let's take us to before all this. This really stemmed from what was considered a difficult pregnancy. But before that, you're living a life, like I said, a healthy lifestyle. It wasn't something that you were thinking about or even paying attention to.
Yeah, very much so. It was all a huge shock to me. I was a marathoner, a triathlete, prior to, always got tested, kept up with my physicals and things of that sort. Always advocated for health and wellness, especially in African Americans. Was never, overweight or live a sedentary lifestyle or any of these things that you work.
That usually would say that you're going to have some sort of failure.
And that kind of worked, against me because, doctors told me, if you would have looked like the typical person that, is comprised of these factors, then we would have caught it earlier. But I did get regular checkups and they did discover that I was spilling protein in my urine, which is a critical sign. But because I had so much muscle mass, that happens too. When you have a lot of muscle mass, you have an excess of protein. So no one ever thought, let's look into this. Let's just work her up.
They would look
at me and they would be like, okay, well, we know who she is and what she does. And then I would go to like a checkup and it would be like after yoga or after running or something. So my blood pressure wouldn't be elevated. It would be fine. So those were you just don't know. And to find out and then there's nothing you can do. You're at stage five. You have to start dialysis immediately. Right. You have no options. What on Mother's Day weekend of 2015, the summer, you know, and I had, my daughter was seven at that time, you know, going on. And so, you know, it was a real situation. And it's like, what do I do? And so that was a very harsh reality. It seems unreal just even now being in that place.
Yeah.
When there's nothing that you can do, when you have just crummy options in front of you, like, okay, this is, and then I was in the hospital for almost a month and I had all of, I mean, it was bad. I had heart failure. I had severe anemia. I had, they didn't even know what was wrong with my kidneys. I was in Vegas and I was tired. That was my only symptom. And I started to get a bit nauseous, but that was it. And as I looked back over the months that led to it, I could see that there were little signs. But again, even being a nurse, you wouldn't know that because renal is a specialty. You know, I did get this funny taste in my mouth, and I went to the dentist three times. I took the whole family. My daughter had strep throat one time. I thought maybe I gave her strep throat. And then they said, no, you're fine. But I kept saying, you know, something's just not right. But everybody did everything and worked me up for everything. So it was just, it sucked. It really did. And then when I got diagnosed, I was at a community hospital and I was like, yeah, I don't know what y'all talking about. So then they said, well, we'll just, you know, we'll try to buy you some time. And then I went to the University of Chicago and they was like, okay, you don't have time. You have to choose between this type of dialysis or this type. We need to have this surgery. I mean, I was like, what?
Well, Darice, let's do this. Let's take a break and we'll come back. Cause I want to get at the emotional toll as well. I mean, everything that you just mentioned to set that up is something a lot of our listeners have probably gone through. I mean, kidney failure is something
too
that
common.
Is way too common. But also the emotional toll of finding out about it, having to go right to stage five, do dialysis, do it. I want to talk more about the emotional that goes into it. And also, of course, the transplant and Takiyah Holmes. All right, Darice Monson in studio tonight. She's the founder of morethanyourkidneys.org. She's talking about her transplant, which came from the kidneys of Takiyah Holmes, the 11-year-old girl who was shot and killed by a stray bullet back in February.
Yes.
Darice, my guest tonight at the big table. Stay with us. In studio with me tonight at the big table, Darice Monson. She is the founder, let me put it this way, she's the founder of morethanyourkidneys.org. And the reason she's the founder of that not-for-profit, education awareness company, is because you went through a transplant 6 months ago, a very high-profile transplant that landed you on the news.
Yes.
Not everybody who gets a transplant gets, you know, cameras and microphones shoved in your face. But this was about Takiyah Holmes, the 11-year-old girl who, you know, all of Chicago mourned, who was shot and killed by a stray bullet while sitting in an idling car. You were able to get her organs. She was an organ donor, and you were able to get her kidneys. So she lives on through you. Before we get to talking about that very heavy story, you know, let's go back to your story in the way that, you know, you were, as I mentioned, a health nut. You, you run triathlons. You've done a lot of different things that automatically would make you very fit and would not make you a candidate for what people know to be kidney failure. So that's where we're kind of at. Your symptoms were there. You're trying to figure it out. Once you were diagnosed and they said, we got to do this fast, we got to go to dialysis, I would assume that you went into education mode. I want to know more about this. What did you learn about your situation and kidney failure in general?
Well, the difficult part about it was when I finally accepted it, I was like, okay, if I could figure out how to do this, like I'll be good. I'm gonna knock this out the park. But the problem was that, again, I was 35 at that time. My daughter was going on 7. So I needed to not just figure out how to do it. I needed to know people that were like me, that were young, you know, that were mobile, that had children, that had a life, you know.
Yeah, because a lot of times it's senior citizens,
you know.
Right.
And so that was my thing. Like, if I could meet someone like that. So I started looking around and researching like crazy. Like, where were the support groups? I started going to hospitals. I started telling people who I was. And I couldn't find anything. Then when I would go to dialysis, I would try to talk to people. And that's not something that people actually do in the renal community. And I found that out. And it was a harsh reality.
They don't talk to each other.
No, we're both in chairs. We're both hooked up. We're getting our blood sent out of our body through a machine, cleansed and back in, and I'm trying to talk to people and like get to know them and stuff. And it was like, who's the new chick? Like, we don't do this. What is she doing? And people were really mean to me because we don't do that in the renal community too much. And you have to understand where people are in their lives. This is what they have to do to survive. It's not time to meet friends, and they don't meet friends in the renal community at dialysis because you look over next treatment and that person is deceased. You know, they have a death wall in these facilities. You know, as soon as you go in,
it's an emotional experience.
It's really
people don't hectic. They're not looking for friends.
No, because you're scared to meet people, right? and have a tenure with them. And I experienced that firsthand. So that was the issue. So I found out very early on that in order for me to do this, I had to create the support that I lacked. You know, when I called these organizations that specialize in this, well, it's their job. So they can only give me general information. When I would go to the doctor and I'm asking specific information, they can only give me of their patient, you know, population. But no, it was no one that looked like me. It was no one that fit my demographic. Like, you can't tell me that there are 35-year-olds taking 22 medications and I have the same problems as a 68-year-old. So you're going to treat me as the 68 or 86-year-old with bad kidneys.
Yeah, right.
And that was rough.
For you, I mean, did you have to educate yourself in kidney health?
Yes,
I mean,
I did.
That was part of it, like that trying was, to figure out why this happened to you?
Yes, why this happened and what can I do? And then you go through the period where I'm not like everybody else. Like, I'm not a non-compliant diabetic. I'm not someone that destroyed my kidneys due to drug use.
That's usually what you'll find is diabetics and people who may be misusing their bodies.
Yeah.
That's usually where you find kidney failures, right? Those are the two areas?
And yeah, those are the two main areas. And so you have that working against you because
the
people judge you.
The third would be genetics.
Genetics, so, right. But either way, if you don't know me and you don't know my story, which most of the world won't, you know, if you're in a clinical setting, you get my paperwork, you see this is your patient for the day. Unfortunately, you meet that, you're like, oh, this is this young black person and they have no kidneys. Oh, it must be sickle cell. It must be drugs. It must be diabetes. They won't. And you already, you know, we have a bad reputation. So when I've experienced that discrimination and things of that sort, you know, and I would watch them treat other people this way, it was like, okay, you know what? I have to be the change. Like, I have to get out here. And then I was always front and center. So now you have this problem. What do I do? Do I hide for like a year or 6 months, get it together, whatever that means, and then tell people? But then I can't go out. I had a catheter through my jugular vein into my heart. This big 4x4 patch. You could see the tube. I mean, it was just... Yeah. Now you get into, I've never had self-esteem issues as a woman.
I was going to say, emotionally, let's talk about the stress that goes into it. I mean, because you could talk about all that all day about just, you know, the judgment, but also like
the
self-esteem issues. But this is life and death. I mean, when you're talking about dialysis and where you were thrown into, this wasn't sort of an early diagnosis where they said, this might happen in a couple of years.
Right.
They determined right away, we're at stage five. We need to get this going
now. And if you want to, I mean, and when they tell you, if you want to live, this is what you have to do. And then my sessions were 6.5 hours a day. So now you're talking 6.5 hours, 3 days a week, raising a child. How?
All the while knowing that the only way out.
The only way.
Mm-hmm. Is a transplant. And to get on a list.
And I had to get
on
a list. So now you're talking 3 days a week, 6.5 hours each session. And then you have to go to the hospital like 3 times a week at least to get on the list. They're going to test everything, you know. So that's a job. So now that's my job. And I want to get on the list as quickly as possible. You know, so that took everything out of me. And you've never been this tired in your life.
What I've heard, and I have no experience with kidney failure. I'm just talking as a consumer of news and stories and understanding a little bit of the medical world, is there are a lot of stories I hear about the list.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, how long it is. I mean, the list has been used for politics to say, you know, we need better health care, this, that. But there is a transplant waiting list.
There is. And it goes by a lot of factors. You know, at first I thought, okay, well, I'm young. You know, I'm a step above the kids. But no, it doesn't work like that because I don't have any time vested in dialysis. That's another issue. We have people that have been on dialysis for 8 years, 18 years, you know, all of this stuff. Every time you get sick, you get kicked off the list, then you have to prove and be worthy enough to get back on the list. It's so much that goes into saving your life. And when I figured that out, that it's not equal, you know, and that then you need someone ideally that's a match for you and it's similar to you. So now I'm talking about generally an African-American woman that's around my same kind of height and weight and disposition. So now you can't be obese. You can't be on medications already. You can't be a diabetic. Like, the more you learn about the stuff, the more discouraged you get. And then, you know, nobody wants to get tested for you. People say, oh, I'm going to get to, oh, your family say one thing, your friends say one thing. But the reality is, people have to give up their time.
Yeah. You're
and
on your own.
A lot of the time, people go get tested for people to find out that they have stuff they didn't even know about, you know. So it's just a lot. And I learned very early on that I'm going to have to do something different. And I created the organization.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, there's a way to wallow in the negativity of a very negative situation, one that is wrought with a lot of discouragement.
Yes.
But then there's also on your end, and this is partially why we're talking tonight, the idea that you've pushed through that even before any sort of transplant. We'll talk about the transplant, but you determined at a certain point you weren't going to let this kill you.
Right. I couldn't.
And you wanted to help others.
Yes, and I did. And I mean, my thing was, I have a daughter. Like, I can't fit any of that in. I can't. My daughter didn't even know I was going through this. She just found out when I got my kidney. Like, this is a different time you're on the news. You're crying, all this stuff, you know. So it was a lot that went with that. But for these 2 years, my daughter never knew anything. We would come up with the most terrible excuses to explain why I had this surgery. And now I got a Hulk arm and all of this stuff because it's my only child. And you can't say, you know, yeah, this happened secondary to being pregnant with you. Like, what the heck, you know? And so, again, there's no roadmap. And so I figured out what it was like to be on this side. You go through, you know, living, being employment stable, you know, and I'm a nurse. I didn't ever have to worry about a job. But then now I can't work those 16 hours or 8 hours. I can't supervise at night. I can't, all these things. I can't pick up overtime. I can't work for all these agencies. And so, you know, people treat you differently and you live a different life. And that's kind of what happened. I lost everything, as most people do, you know, now that you have a disability and you have a chronic illness and, you know, you can't pay all of your bills now. You have to pay for medication, and dialysis is $7,000 a month. And now you're on Medicare if you want to stay on dialysis, and everybody doesn't want to be on the list. So now you have to deal with that, you know. So then I discovered how legislation controls your life. Okay, if you want to be on this list, you got to stay in this state. You got wherever you're listed, you have to be ready for them to call you and be there. I mean, it's just a lot. And so there came the organization. Not only am I going to do this, I'm going to put myself out there and do it, and I'm going to show other people how it's done. And it came with blood, sweat, tears, fears. You know, I put it on social media, and it just was what it was and dealt with it.
Darvice Monson is my guest tonight at the big table. She is 6 months after transplant, kidney transplant. She is the founder of the organization morethanyourkidneys.org. We'll continue our conversation with Darvice. Especially, we'll talk about she was the recipient of a kidney that came from Takiyah Holmes, the 11-year-old girl who was shot and killed by a stray bullet on the South Side back in late February. It was 6 months ago. But we'll talk about that because that was a huge story, not only in Chicago, but then the story of you getting her kidney also became a big story. It was 6 months since that. Darvice Monson in studio tonight. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Darvice Monson. She is here celebrating her 6 month anniversary of getting a new kidney. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And it's going well. That's great. She's the founder of morethanyourkidneys.org. She should know because she got a transplant about 6 months ago after being diagnosed with chronic kidney disease, very rapid. The diagnosis and going into dialysis and getting on a list, and that's kind of where we left the conversation. The people know your story because you were on the news because of the person who was the donor, Takiyah Holmes, 11-year-old girl who was shot and killed by a stray bullet. It was one of the stories. I mean, all too often we got to hear about these stories, but this is one of the stories that really grabbed Chicago for, unfortunately, for just a short amount of time, as they all do. But the idea of, you know, it was a tipping point. I guess I'll ask the question, you know, were you paying attention to the news? I mean, even before you knew that there might be an organ donor,
right.
Were you paying attention to that story?
I was paying attention to that story because I'm Facebook friends with her mom. And at that time, I didn't know exactly who her mom was. This is a small world. So my youngest sister and my daughter My youngest sister is the aunt of Takaya Holmes, and she's also the aunt to my daughter. So I knew who Takaya was because my daughter played with her a few times. What I didn't know at the time was that her mom was my Facebook friend and that her mom was her mom. So I saw the story, but I didn't relate the two.
Right, right.
And so I had already been at that time. I was in the midst of a media tour for the organization. So I just did Chicago Proud and a couple of other shows. And
just
WCIU,
talking about, just talking
Ebony Magazine. And I was just out there talking about and educating, doing what I did for the organization and praying that someone would get tested for me. And so we went from a family saying congratulations on all of that to the next time I looked up, my sister was calling me and I had no idea. I didn't know that they were giving me the kidney until I got to the hospital. And I took forever to get to the hospital because I was prepping for media the next day. I had like 3 invite onlys. I was going out of town. I had 4 trips planned. I was supposed to do a cruise. Like, it was crazy for the organization at that time. So I was keeping up with that. And I just took my time getting to the hospital because how do you express your condolences for a situation like that? It's a kid, you know. I have only been to a few funerals for children, and those were children that I took care of as a nurse, so that was difficult for me. And it's, what do you say? You know, it was her grandmother's only grandbaby. I know Patsy very well. And that's like my stepmother because that's my sister's mom. So I was just stalling, like, I'll be there, you know. And then they kept calling. And then I was, you know, getting my hair done and meeting with my stylist and all this stuff. And finally, I got the call. My phone just started going off like crazy. My sister kept calling and she let me know, we're going to take her off of life support. You know, it was just, every time she called, it was just worse. So it was like, I'll be there. And so then my phone just started going like crazy. And then she finally said, somebody said, you know, they just announced your name on the news. Do you know Patsy Holmes? I'm like, yeah, that's my sister's mom. And she's like, yeah, you know, your family's there and they want to give you Takaya's kidney. And I was like, they said that on the, and he's like, yeah, they said that. And so I felt a lot, I just wasn't comfortable with that at the time because I had already had stuff. I was already, someone had offered to be my donor, and the day we were supposed to schedule everything, they canceled. And I went, so the world knew that.
There's already emotional swirl just about the idea of having a transplant that you've been waiting on a list for 2 years.
Yeah.
The idea that the kidney was going to come from someone you knew, but also someone who the Chicago knows.
Yes.
An 11-year-old girl. I mean, it's so emotional. There's so much emotion. It is too much. I mean, this idea. But I mean,
and it's so much that goes into that. And so my thing was, they may mean well, but is that really going to happen? So I didn't really get excited. You know, I didn't rush to the hospital. I was still just like, okay, thanks. Like, because when you live this life, people say every day, oh, I'm going to get tested. I'll give you my kidney. It's not, your Uber driver says it. Like, it's serious, you know. But we hold on to that because it's life-saving. So when I finally did get there, you know, they said everything. They took her off. You know, I don't know how to feel. And then I know what goes into being a match. It's not easy. So it took a while. And then finally they said what her blood type was. And I was like, oh, wow, it could happen. And then, you know, and I didn't know that they had already worked up everything and that they knew that, you know what, we could go. So then my doctor came and, you know, everything just started happening.
It has to happen fast.
It had to. And I was kind of like, no. And then, you know, press started getting in touch with me like, we heard you're going to be the. So I turned everything off. I just sat. I prayed. It was a lot. And then I'm looking at the mom. And this was my first time meeting her. So for her to say, I'm going to give you my daughter's kidney, I'm looking at her like, she may say that, but when they go to get it, you know, I mean, I'm like, you know, so I wasn't really. And I remember everything she said, the way that she said it, and she walked away. And I still just sat there. She said, stop crying. My daughter will want this. I want this for you. And that was the last time I seen her until we did MSNBC. And until then, I had nightmares after I got the kidney that she changed her mind. Like, it's so serious. People have no idea how complex the situation is. Because for every day, as any transplant recipient will tell you, that you exalt in your victories in another day, you know that there's someone else in a life that needs. And then when you know these people, you know, even being Facebook friends now is difficult. If I'm scrolling and saying, woo, more than your kidneys, or we did this today, we accomplished that. And I look on the other side, I know that someone else
is. A lot of heartbreak, yeah.
It's rough. It's rough.
It is. I mean, it's complicated and it's emotional and I would assume very tearful in just the idea of getting a kidney.
Yeah, it is.
And it being involved with a high profile case in which Takaya Holmes. It's a young girl.
With her life ahead of her, you know, and I have a 9-year-old now. you know, and my daughter knew her more than I did because my daughter played with her several times, you know. So then you have to, you know, deal with that. And it's just, and then when you go out, people don't realize when I go out some places, you know, depending on where I am, kids are there and kids knew this girl. I mean, you know, she volunteered, she was active in the church, she wanted to be an actress. And I've had kids run up to me and they don't even know what a kidney is, you know, right after it happened. And they're just like, you're the one from the news, you have Takiyah's kidney. And they're hugging me. And I'm like, you know, it's a lot. And wow. I'm just so grateful. But I deal with it every day and it's very rough. And only thing you can do is thank God, thank the family, and just live in a way that you're honoring her legacy every day. And just realize that life is so short and, you know, an innocent child, these children, you know, it's crazy. I mean, just to be out there shooting, you know, not worrying about, I mean, it's your mom, you know, it's your day off. You're with your children. She has a young brother, you know, yeah. Her brother isn't even 5 years old. It's just sickening. It really is.
You know, I mean, I think about that story and I saw the story as well. And that's when we started communicating about trying to set something up. And I said, after you you get back on your feet and, you know, the transplant is a success, I'd love to come talk to you about your story. You know, as that you were going through that process, I mean, the idea, I mean, it takes a while to make sure that the kidney is taking.
Right.
We talked a little bit at the beginning about the medicine and the pills that you have to take every single day to make sure that your body doesn't reject it. You know, as you continue and you pray and you're excited about the future because you have a new lease on life.
Right.
Yep. Is it a challenge? Because it was such a personal story.
Yes.
Because it was such a personal story that all of Chicago knew who Takiyah was, that mm-hmm. that you know that you're involved with the people, that kids are coming up and hugging you. Does that make it more emotional for you? Does it make it harder?
It makes it a lot harder. And it feels like every time I think I take like two steps toward living my life in a certain direction, I take like 10 steps back because of it. Because the world just really doesn't understand what it's like to be in this life period as a transplant recipient for myself as well as for the donor family. People call every day, I kid you not, people call from all over and they want to talk about this, or they want to know, can I get the mom on? And it's like, we're grieving. She's grieving and she has another child. She has a young son. Like, and I'm a mom, you know. It's like talking to producers and they're like, okay, we're going to get you guys together and we're going to come to your place. And I mean, they don't know. And I'm like, my daughter has a room there. They don't understand your connection and just how no one will ever, you know, and it's difficult on both ends. You know, at first you don't know what to do. I kept calling her and texting her and thanking her. But then, you know, I didn't hear from her for a long time. And then she has her days where she's down and then she has other days where she's, you don't know. And that's what it's like on this side, because you can't, how many times can you call and thank someone? You're always going to be the constant reminder of what went wrong, period. No matter how great you live your life, you know, you have to know that someone had to die in order for you to live. That's hell in and of itself. It's a blessing and a curse, and there's no roadmap to that, you know. So all I can do is, like I said, every moment, you know, as a transplant recipient, you talk to your organ every day. You know, you make these plans and you're like, I'm gonna do this and that, and that's my reality that people don't know.
Well, you know,
about,
I mean, you mentioned early on, and I guess I call back to our own conversation, just the idea of being someone who was in this predicament with a chronic kidney disease at such a young age, and making the choice, instead of regressing or hiding, making a choice to be the founder of morethanyourkidneys.org, to educate, to continue to be aggressive and being positive to helping other people who are going through this situation. It makes me think, I mean, that same ethos, that same philosophy that you talked about there applies to the situation you find yourself in,
mm-hmm.
where, yeah, there are a lot of ways to look at how your life has turned out after this transplant. But to continue the work with More Than Your Kidney and kidneys, and to be able to talk to other people and be able to share your story,
right.
like you're doing tonight to a lot of people who might be listening in WGN radio, are like, I'm going through the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to
and
be.
And this is why a lot of people, not to cut you off though, but this is why a lot of people don't want transplants. It goes into these type of things because you have to work and then you have to work, you know, and people don't understand that. You know, everybody congratulates you and say, yeah. And you have to deal with that, because every day you could be rejected no matter what you do. you know, and nothing is simple. I got honored for Mother's Day. Now I got diagnosed Mother's Day, 2015, 2017. I got my kidney. I'm being honored, and I'm honoring my donor in Florida by the National Kidney Foundation of Florida. It was awesome. And so I'm walking on the beach, you know, having a good time. And then someone had to say, hey, yeah, great. You can't just be walking on the beach, because I can't, if I get a cut, I don't have an immune system that's set up like that, and it could ruin my transplant. Like, that, these are the decisions that happen really quickly that people don't understand. Right. Little simple stuff. My life isn't like that anymore. If I drop a pill on the floor, if you know, it gets to go in the garbage. Like, that sounds stupid, but my daughter was like, man, you can't even kiss it up to God anymore. Like, you might die. Like, thanks a lot. But she's 9. You know, it's like, man, the 30-second rule doesn't work for my mom. But that helped, you know, it's really that serious. People go out and have drinks, and it's a huge margarita, and there's 10 straws. I can't, you know, we can have a girls' night or whatever, but I can't do that, you know? So it's just things like that, that, you know, it's a totally new life, and is you it, do this forever.
Is it difficult, and we'll wrap up here, but is it difficult to be the spokesperson, to be someone who needs to share a positive story when sometimes you don't feel like being positive?
Yes, it does. It does. Because people don't know what they don't know until it happens to them. You know, and I deal with that all the time. You know, people throw you to the side. They already had a plan for your life. They knew you weren't going to make it. They knew you were going to have to wait 10 years for a kidney. They knew, and they treated you a certain way because you were down and out. And now it's like, you know what? I'm sorry. It's like, okay, now what? So do you think that God would bring me this far? And your life really, you become an extension of your donor. You know, the way I see the world now is totally different. I have a child's kidney. You know, I see innocence. I see vulnerability. I see positivity. I see everything differently now. So if you thought you knew me then, that's fine. But you have to have known me then through it, because I'm totally different now, because nothing is a big deal, you know. And I'm just grateful for the support, and I'm grateful to be able to be in this situation that I lived it and I'm living it, because that makes the world a difference. Yeah. And that gives people hope. So yeah, we're just grateful for the support, especially Chicago, because we had to go so far and near and then come back to Chicago, and now Chicago is showing us so much support, and so we appreciate it.
Darvice Monson, my guest tonight, the recipient of a kidney transplant 6 months ago, next week.
Yes.
Congratulations. And I know there's a lot of hard work still that has to happen. Yes. I don't want to be that one person who's like, congratulations.
Right?
of course, a well-documented, well-publicized story. And you are the founder of morethanyourkidneys.org. Like I said, you can find it morethanyourkidneys.org. Darvice, thanks for sharing your story and coming in tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I just want to say one last thing. August 1st, next Tuesday, we're having an event at the Thompson Center. It is now Minority Awareness Month. As you know, a lot of minorities, African Americans and Hispanics, you know, need kidneys more so, but our numbers are very low. So we're going to have everybody coming out. The Secretary of State is going to be there. Superintendent Eddie Johnson is going to be there, who's getting his transplant soon, we all hope. And other recipients will be there August 1st. So please, everyone, come out in Chicago and support us.
We'll put it on the website. Yeah.
Please. I'll give you all the information.
All right. Thanks, Darvice.
Thanks, Justin.